Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be talking about a sport that millions and millions of people have a real passion for. What is that sport? It's golf. My guest today is Ray Hollanda, and his book is called The Golfer of the Decade on the PGA Tour. Now, this book is really something that if you have anyone that you know of that is a fan of golf, they are absolutely going to love this because of all the effort that Ray has put into it. Ray, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. Glad to be here.
Now, you were a NASA research scientist, which is fascinating, but along with that, you have been a golf enthusiast for years. Whatever turned you on to the game?
Well, I just happened to live near a pitch and putt course, so that as a kid I could start the game early in life, and I've been playing it ever since.
Wow. Apparently you've done everything from being a caddy to playing golf, like you said, through high school, and you were in a traveling golf league. You volunteered at the PGA, but the other side, which a lot of people who are in golf don't do, is you're a researcher into history. And I know my dad was an avid golfer. He just loved the game. But you have so much wonderful information about this institution called the PGA. When was it first founded?
The PGA was formed in 1916. So that its first first complete decade was the 1920s. And I, being a history buff, decided to use the golfer of the decade as a way of looking at the history of the PGA Tour. And I define the golfer of the decade as that person who won the most tournaments within each calendar decade.
With the PGA, was this one of the very first groups, or was there? When did golf really start catching on in this country?
Oh, I would say that it started probably in the late 1890s when we first started building golf courses in this country. And the U.S. Open was founded in the late 1890s, and then the PGA Tour in 1916. When the professionals form their own organization.
Now, these tournaments, there were not a whole lot of golf courses available at that time. Now there are literally thousands. Am I correct?
Well, it's certainly smaller than we have now, but they were starting to build pretty many by that time.
Now, where were the tournaments typically played, let's say in the early 1900s? Was it more in the northern area of the United States? Was it West Coast? What was the agenda? And how often was the tournament held?
Well, I think it probably started from the East Coast and worked its way west because it was imported from Britain. And that would be the first place where British people coming to this country would begin the popularization of the sport.
One of the, well, I guess actually the golfer of the decade in the 20s, according to your historical research, was Walter Hagen. And he was the son of a shoemaker from Rochester, New York. He had a phenomenal history. I've never heard of the man, but he was really quite a golfer. What was it that made him such a powerful and unique golfer here in the United States as well as overseas?
Well, he just was one of those fortunate people who in his youth lived near a golf course and went to work there, first as a caddy and then in the clubhouse, and eventually he became a pro at a very young age.
Now, he played, you said, about 2,000 exhibition matches. That's a lot of games.
Yes. Now, in that era, most of the golfers on the PGA Tour were club pros, whereas Walter Hagen was one of the first pure touring pros. And therefore, without a club job, he had to figure out a way to make money. And exhibition matches were one of the ways he did, and then he produced his own line of clubs, which was another way to make money. And this was... And those 2,000 matches he played with an Australian trick shot artist, who, and between them they wandered the world in those exhibitions.
You had a term that I had never heard of. Of course, I'm not a golfer, an avid golfer. What are the yips? Y-I-P-S? I've never heard of that term before.
Yeah, the yips is a nervous condition that is peculiar to the putting, the act of putting in golf, and it's a mental problem which results in ruining a golfer's putting ability, and it's surprising how many of the great golfers of throughout history. Have at one time or another run into this malady and had to figure out a way to cure it before they could go on in their careers.
Ben Hogan, excuse me, go ahead, you were going to say something.
I was going to say Sam Snead is probably one of the most well-known of that group of people who dealt with the yips throughout his career. And invented various different ways to putt in order to cure that problem.
Just, it's amazing. One man that I can remember hearing about when I was growing up was Sam Snead, and he was quite a guy. Ben Hogan also was someone, but now Paul Runyon is the golfer of the decade on the PGA Tour that you mentioned for the 30s. Ben Hogan was in the 40s. What made Ben Hogan so spectacular?
Well, Ben Hogan probably practiced more than any other person in his era. And he hit so many golf balls in order to try. He was a perfectionist, and that was his way of dealing with the game. Is to practice more than any other person. And it turns out that practice did make him perfect, almost. And he was the golfer of the decade in the 1940s when he won 52 tournaments. And in the last year of that decade, 1949, he suffered a terrible automobile accident when a bus hit him and his wife while they were driving through Texas to a golf tournament. And brought an end to his career at that point in time. But a year later, he recovered sufficiently from his injuries to be able to play very limitedly. But he was able to play at almost the peak of his game that he had before, but he could not play anywhere nearly as frequently as he had before.
Mm-hmm. I know that you mentioned that he was so dedicated to the game that he'd play golf with sticks and rocks just so that he could practice, and he made up his own golf courses. That is just phenomenal dedication, and you go into...
Excuse me, you're confusing him with that part with Sam Snead.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
It was Sam who did that. In his
Sam Snead.
Mm-hmm, as a kid.
Now, you said that there were a lot of golfers from Texas in your book.
Yes, that's true. A lot of the great golfers were Texans.
You mentioned, let's see, it was Hogan, Snead, and Nelson, and then Lloyd Mangrum.
It was not Snead. It was Hogan and Nelson.
Okay, Hogan and Nelson were from Texas. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lloyd
Snead was from
Texas.
Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The golfers really, it takes a lot of discipline for them to really achieve what they want to achieve. And I know we're going to be talking about Tiger Woods, but these are people that preceded him and really made golf a very, very popular game. When did they start televising the golf game?
Television came to golf in the 1950s, just at the time Arnold Palmer was becoming a golfer on the tour. And Arnold Palmer and TV just went together great because he had the swagger that really appealed to golf fans, and his enthusiasm on the course just captured their imaginations. And golf attained a great increase in its popularity as a result of television and Arnold Palmer in the 1950s.
Arnold Palmer, when he reached that point, how old was he? Was he in his early 30s?
No, he was in his 20s when he was playing, probably in his late 20s when he became a star on the tour.
Now, you said his influence on the game of golf was a lot more than the performance on his course. And, of course, every once in a while, you'll see an advertisement with him on television. He still has a tremendous influence on the game of golf. But tell us how this was so significant. Why was it that he was that person that had just this tremendous impact?
Well, he just, I guess he just had a mind that just thought of all sorts of things. He was the first golfer to hire a business agent to run his golfing business, and as a result, he spread out his talents into building courses and other ways to make money at the game. He was the guy who popularized the British Open for American golfers. Back in the 20s and 30s, American golfers had played in the British Open, but they lost their interest in it in the 40s and 50s, and Arnold Palmer came along and came up with the idea that we should have consider four tournaments as majors. He and a golf writer of his came up with the idea of saying that the U.S. Open, the British Open, the PGA, and the Masters tournament should be considered the majors and should get special attention. And when he started going over to play in the British Open and won it in 1961 and 1962, it really caught on with Americans, and it's been a great tournament for them ever since.
Didn't he also start the golfing channel on television?
He helped to start the senior tour, and he helped to start the golf channel. So he just got involved in many issues that became very successful.
Now, Jack Nicklaus came up after him, and for those of you who are listening, we're talking with Ray Hollanda and his book, The Golfer of the Decade on the PGA Tour. He's a NASA scientist that really loves the game of golf and loves the history of golf, and this book is just loaded from front to back with tremendous information about people I didn't even know anything about. You talk about Nicklaus, Jack Nicklaus. What was the most significant thing about Jack as a golfer, because he was a well-recognized name?
Well, Jack just had a special talent for the game. He was fortunate enough for his father to have been a member of a country club, and he got excellent instruction as a youth. And so by the age of 20, he was already a skilled golfer, and by the time he was 22, he won his first tournament, his first major, in a head-to-head battle with Arnold Palmer at the Oakmont Country Club in Pennsylvania. And from that point on, Arnold had to deal with Jack as a threat to win any time they were both in a tournament together. And they were about 10 years apart in age.
Tony Lima, who was known as Champagne Tony, I had never heard of him, but apparently he was quite a good golfer, but there was a tragedy associated with Tony, and it was just absolutely amazing. What was it that occurred on July 24th, 1966?
Well, Tony had established himself as one of the better golfers of the game, and had won the British Open, and was flying from Cleveland to Chicago after the PGA Championship had been played in Cleveland. And in arriving in Chicago, the plane crashed and he was killed.
He and his wife and two friends.
There were four people in the plane, correct.
Mm-hmm. And what you said was that while they were making a low pass over the Sportsman Club golf facility in Lansing, Illinois, he crashed on the seventh hole of the golf course, and everybody was killed in the plane. Just a very, very sad story. Now, Lee Trevena, now the golfer of the decade for the 70s was Jack Nicklaus, but you bring out Lee Trevena, and of course he ended up doing television ads. He had such a personality. He was just absolutely right out there. And you mentioned a number of other golfers, but I had no idea that Trevena, along with Bobby Nichols and Jerry Hurd, had been hit by lightning. And that just blew me away. He survived. All three of these men survived the experience.
They survived it, but Lee Trevena was never the same golfer as he had been because of that. He was fighting Jack Nicklaus head to head in many major tournaments in the early 1970s before he was struck by lightning, and after that he was never the same. He won a few more tournaments. And he's still a competent player, and has been was a success on the senior tour after he reached the age of 50. But he was a superstar for a few years there in the 1970s, and would have given Jack Nicklaus a bigger run for his money than he did. But in a couple of tournaments, a couple of major tournaments that they played in the early 70s, Trevena showed that he could beat Jack Nicklaus in his prime.
What type of money did the competitors in the PGA Tour make?
Well, That's a difficult question to answer. People like Palmer and Nicklaus, who obtained business agents to run their lives business, were able to make enormous amounts of money as they got involved in all the various aspects of golf, from building courses to promoting equipment, but The average golfer doesn't have the average golfer on the PGA Tour doesn't have the name to attract the kind of money that the top superstars can when they endorse things. So there are a few very rich and a few who can make a living at golf, and then there are those who never get good enough to really make golf a money-making profession.
Hale Irwin is a name I'm not familiar with, yet apparently he became a superstar in 1997 at the age of 52 when he won the first $2 million in 9 wins on the senior tour. I didn't know the senior tour you could make that much money playing the game.
Well, Hale Irwin won more tournaments on the senior tour after the age of 50 than any other golfer in the senior tour's history. So he just happened to be the kind of guy who, in his 50s, was still improving his game. And,
wow. So for anybody who's listening, they need to know that
remarkable.
They get... Yeah, they ought to go out and try the senior tour. My goodness, $2 million? My gracious, that's amazing. And like you said, for him to continue to improve as he got older is just awesome. Okay,
and
who
was
the...
He was pretty good while he was on the tour, too. He won 3 United States Open championships.
Tom Watson, 1980s.
Yes, Tom Watson was famous for winning the British Open. He won 5 British Opens, which is more than any other American has ever done. And what is probably the most remarkable thing Tom Watson did in his career just happened last year, when at the age of 59, he came within one stroke of winning a 6th British Open. And,
oh, my heaven.
To look at that in perspective, the golfer, the oldest golfer ever to win a major was Julius Boros at the age of 48. And the oldest golfer ever to win a PGA tournament was Sam Snead at the age of 52. And at the age of 59 last year, Tom Watson came within one stroke of being the winner of the 2009 British Open.
Now, I know that in the 1990s, Nick Price was the winner, but I want to move forward because of the timing here that we've got together. And let's talk about the one that has been for this period in the 2000s, Tiger Woods. I was really amazed, and I know how dedicated Tiger Woods has been to the game, but he really worked hard for a long, long time. When you hear all the hype about Tiger Woods, you're not aware of all the dedicated effort that was put in for years before he really started winning tournaments.
That's certainly true. He won 3 U.S. amateurs, and that had never been done before. And with the winning of the 3rd amateur at the age of 20, he decided at that point that he was ready for the tour, so he dropped out of Stanford, where he had spent the last 2 years as a student, and became a member of the PGA Tour, and the rest is history. He was the golfer of the decade in the 2000s, and it was the greatest decade in the history of the PGA Tour. He won 56 tournaments in the 2000 decade, which beat Ben Hogan's record of 52 that had stood for over 50 years. He won 4 majors in a row in the year 2000 and 2001, and that had never been done in history. And he had 3 winning streaks during the decade of the 2000s. One was a 7 tournament win streak, one was a 6 tournament win streak, and one was a 5 tournament win streak, where he won that many tournaments that he entered in consecutive fashion in each time, each period. He has set so many records in that one decade he established himself as one of the greatest in the game.
Absolutely. And I was fascinating that there was, in 1999, the amount of money that was paid out in prize winnings. That you say here, rather than waiting for the new millennium to make innovative changes, the U.S. PGA Tour came to an agreement with the other five major PGA Tours of the world to jointly stage three new international tournaments in 1999. And the best players in the world would compete, and the winner's check would be $1 million. And the total prize money would reach almost $132 million, an increase of about 35% over the 1998 season. Is that still the same today? Has that gone up? Has it gone down? Here we are in 2010.
Well, all those tournament winnings have gone up with inflation over the period. That's been true throughout the history of the game. As the increase in the prize money has followed or led the inflationary trend throughout its history.
With everything that has evolved, Tiger Woods has gone through a lot of personal challenges, and he's back out on the course, and his game has not been up to what it was. I think he will turn around and come back up, surprising everybody at a particular point. Who do you see right now as being the top golfer?
Let's see. Now that Tiger has had a bad year since his discoveries, since the discovery of his various incidences he had with women. It broke up his marriage, and he went into rehab he's recovering from knee surgery from the previous year, and he's gone through a year where he didn't win a tournament. So we'll see if he is able to come back or not.
Do you have anyone else that is, let's say, right behind Tiger Woods that you see as someone that's going to be tremendous competition for him?
Well, Phil Mickelson has been his closest competitor as far as people on the tour in the last few years, and Vijay Singh had an excellent year between the three of them. They were the three leading winners on the tour in the 2000s. And Phil Mickelson is the greatest left-hander in the history of the PGA Tour, and Vijay Singh is now the greatest old-timer in the history of the PGA Tour because he's won more tournaments over the age of 40. Than any other person in history, a title that Sam Snead held for about half a century before Vijay Singh came and took his place.
You also have someone, Aryo Ishikawa, who was at the age of 18 selected to play on the rest of the world team, and he's already competed in more than six tournaments. And that was as of 2009, and I don't know if he's played anymore, but he was an up-and-coming young person that was just very dynamic and quite special. This book, The Golfer of the Decade on the PGA Tour, is loaded with absolutely fascinating information about each of the men that made their mark in the game, details that you may not find in any of the hot sheets that have been put out in any of the major newspaper publications, but Ray has done a tremendous amount of work on this. You can go to iUniverse.com, find out more about books about this book, The Golfer of the Decade on the PGA Tour, and the holidays are coming up. If you know of someone that loves the game, loves the trivia of the game, this would be a real cool thing to put in their holiday gift stack. Ray, I want to thank you very much for being with me today, and keep up the history. I mean, you really have a knack for pulling all of this information together in a wonderful, cohesive way that just about anybody can understand.
Well, thank you for having me, Donna.
It's been a delight. This is Donna Sebo, the golfer of the decade on the PGA Tour. Ray Hollander has been my guest. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. And if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I would be just absolutely delighted to do so. And if you're a first-time listener, all you need to know is you call in, give me your first name or initial, and then after that, of course, I do like to know where you're calling in from. After that, I'll give you my mental impressions, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything you may have an interest in. So the toll-free telephone number to call in to is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Well, I do want to let you know, tomorrow, the person that we're going to be having on as a guest is Michael Shane. Now, Michael is a medium, a psychic, but he's also a person that produces physical phenomena in a trance state. Now, Michael is going to be doing a program this coming Thursday, and if you're in the Tacoma, Washington area, I think you might want to set aside some time. We're going to be having an evening of mediumship. It's this Thursday, October the 7th, from 7 until 9 p.m. This event is going to be held at the Blue Mouse Theater, which is at 2611 North Proctor Street in Tacoma. And there's going to be various individuals there who are going to be giving demonstrations. Someone asked if I was going to be up on the platform. No, I'm not. But there are going to be a number of other people demonstrating different psychic abilities. So if you'd like to attend this event this Thursday, call 253-503-3773. That's 253-503-3773. Or check out the information at thespiritualartsalliance.com. That's thespiritualartsalliance.com. And they'll give you all the ticket information and everything else that you need to know. Now, tomorrow, Michael's going to be on the air with me. And he is just back in the state of Washington after being in Mississippi, made a trip across country with his family, and is going to be getting ready for the event Thursday night. So we're going to be talking about this particular kind of demonstration. This is not something that is very often done. Years ago, there were more people that did these demonstrations, but physically it's quite demanding. And you have to have some training relative to it. So it's going to be interesting talking with Michael, and we'll have him on the air tomorrow. So I hope you'll be able to join it. Also, on Wednesday, we're going to be having a delightful guest from Alaska. Tam Agnosti Gelsick is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about a wolverine. Yes. And her name is Wilma. This is a true story and an absolutely delightful one that I know you'll enjoy. And there's something special behind the story that we'll be sharing with you as well. And then The Courage to Be Free. This is a book written by Guy Finley. Guy Finley is a very successful author. He's going to be on the road traveling. Tim Weichman is going to be speaking for Guy Finley. So we'll be talking about The Courage to Be Free on Thursday. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking about wireless radiation rescue. You've heard me bring this subject up before. I think wireless phones are absolutely awesome, but they are unregulated. What do we as consumers need to be aware of, both in the use of them for safety and our children's use of them, and how we can protect them? So we've got an interesting array of guests this week. And by the way, whenever you want to find out who's coming up on the show, all you need to do is go right into the BBS Radio website, hit the Donna Sebo Show, and you'll find all the information about the upcoming guests. It's all there for your opportunity to review and preview. So I wanted to give that information to you. And I want to thank those of you who are sending me your paranormal stories. I'm absolutely delighted. The deadline for submitting stories will be January 1 of 2011. So if you have a story regarding a ghost experience, something for you that was extremely personal, do share it with me, because I'd like to include it in my book. And of course, put your contact information in there as well so that I will have it if I need it. But we are collecting up to 100, and I'd love to have yours included. So send it to Donna at Delphi.com. International.com. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. And right now you can give me a call if you like at 888-815-9756. In today's world, we're all watching our pennies, nickels, dimes, quarters, and even our dollars. But someone decided they were going to do an experiment, a test, and it was you might want to try it yourself sometime. Let me just put it this way. There was an individual who decided, it was a fellow, along with his girlfriend, to hand out 100 envelopes. They live in Texas, and in each envelope, they put a dollar. And along with the dollar, there was a little note inside. But they said they believed very strongly, these two people, in the power of giving, and that what goes around comes around. But they thought they needed to set an example, not just talk about it, but do it. So this was a few years ago. It was around the holidays period where these individuals had really been having a tough time. Well, a friend came through for these two people, enabling them and their children to have one of the best Christmases they had ever experienced. Well, he never forgot the generosity of this friend and wanted to be able to reciprocate. He wasn't going to be able to reciprocate to that particular individual, but he wanted to do something. So whenever he could, if he'd help somebody out, but he felt that he had to do something more. He said, there's got to be something else I can do. So Doc and Mindy decided they were going to put out some very interesting concepts. With the note in the envelope, it tells the recipient to keep the money if the person needs it, or to pass it on and even add to it if the person doesn't. And he said, it's not about the money or whose hands it ultimately lands in. It's about the hands along the way doing the giving. Now, what has happened because of this action that they have taken? They handed out $100, $1 in each envelope with the note. If you need it, use it, or pass it on, and even add to it, if you desire, to someone else. Do you know that this little experiment that they did has inspired thousands of people to give? And he said, it keeps on, like the Energizer Bunny, going and going and going. People do things like this, and it's marvelous. And they're really pleased to see the results. Now, if you'd like to find out more about this, you can go to their website, needitkeepit.org. Needitkeepit.org. Anytime somebody tells me that the world is just a horribly ugly place, when I hear about a story like this, I realize that's not the case at all. There are so many people out there doing the best they can with what they have. And maybe they've been helped in some way. And just like Doc and Mindy, they decided that they are going to do more. And it just had a ripple effect that keeps going and going and going. And I think it's absolutely marvelous. Now, on Friday, I had started telling you a story about a young boy named Zach and his dog Brandy, and I wasn't able to finish it because I ran out of time. So I know we're getting ready to go on break, and when we come back from break, I'm going to tell the story again and then finish it so that you will know all of the good things about a fine young man named Zach and a pet project that he came up with that is just absolutely fabulous, which, by the way, speaking of pets, have you ever considered any of your old towels, any of your old items that you know could be, you know, the bath towels especially, anything of that nature, old blankets, wash them and then take them to sometimes your vet. My vet just loves to have these things because they have so many dogs they take care of, and they're always washing them, and they always need something for the animals to lay down on. Well, even shelters appreciate things like this, old blankets, old towels, maybe even some toys that you have, old collars. These are things that if you've had a pet pass away and you don't know what to do with these things, don't hesitate to donate them. Ask your vet if he could use it or donate it to your local shelter because that is really quite significant. Well, we're going to be going on break in just a little bit. Quickly, I want to mention to those of you up in Alaska, I'm going to be in Alaska, both in Fairbanks and Anchorage. I'm going to be there from the 12th through the 18th, and I'll be available for private consultations. And if you'd like to reach me, you can call my office at 800-872-8852. Also, those of you in New York, I'm going to be coming to New York City, and I'll be in New York City available for private consultations between the 21st and the 23rd. So I do want to let you know about that. And if you, again, need to reach me for private sessions, my time is going to be rather tight, but I will be available for some. You can call me at my office, 800-872-8852. And I've got a wonderful recipe and some other things that I can share. But before we go into that, let's take a break. Don't forget you can call in and chat with me if you so desire at 888-815-9756. We're going to be back in just a moment. This is Donna Siebel.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley.
framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. And give me a buzz if you want to chat, 888-815-9756. I was talking to you about Zach on Friday. Now, Zach was 9 years old, and I'll just go over the story again because maybe some of you didn't hear it on Friday. But Zach was 9 years old when his mom took him into a shelter because he had this wonderful dog, Brandy. And he just loved this dog. But they felt that Brandy needed a companion. You know, the family gets busy, and it's good to have a pal for a dog. Keeps them active and healthy. Well, when Zach went into the shelter, instead of getting happy, wandering around, looking at all the dogs, he became quite depressed. And the reason he became depressed is that he had been in the shelter about a month before with his Cub Scout troop. And when his Cub Scout troop was there, there weren't so many dogs. This time when he was in there looking for a pal, for Brandy, the place was packed with animals. And he just got really depressed over this. So he went to one of the shelter workers and wanted to know why they had so many animals. Well, the shelter worker said, "There are so many people out of work, Zach. This is a very difficult time economically for a lot of people, and they cannot afford to take care of their animals. They can't buy the food to feed them. So they bring them into the shelter hoping that we're going to find them homes." Well, Zach was just really upset with this, and he got very emotional about it. Then he went over, when he got home, he went to his own dog, Brandy, and he just said, "Gee, Brandy, I'd never give you up. I'd rather starve than give you up." Well, he turned around to his mother, and he said, "You know, Mom, we need to be able to feed these dogs, all of these dogs." Well, you can imagine his mother's response to this. She's going, "Oh, my son, his heart as big as the world outside. We're never going to be able to afford this." And she was very wise because she said, "You know, Zach, I'd really like to do that too, but I just don't know how we're going to do it." And he said, "We've got to do something, Mom." So she turned the question to him. "Do you have any ideas, Zach, about how we can do this?" Now, this is a mother that was really, really very, very smart. Because instead of her trying to fix it, she asked Zach, "What do you think we could do?" Well, Zach came up with an idea of holding a pet food drive. He talked to the principal of his school, and he made up flyers, and he put the flyers all around the school. Now, his mother thought, well, you know, he's going to get a little bit from the kids. To her amazement, he collected over 1,000 pounds of dog and cat food. This was amazing. Well, his mother was thrilled. I mean, her son had really accomplished something quite significant. Well, other people found out about this. There was a local television station. They put Zach's story on the air, and people started donating food. They found out where Zach's family was, and they said, we've got some food for you, and they just drop it off. Well, the mother said it looked like one of these pet stores. They had so much food, it was unbelievable. Well, Zach had a new challenge. His pet drive was so successful, what was he going to do? Well, there was an owner that had a dog washing business and said, if you like, you can bring some of this food over to my place and I can help you give it away. So they started doing a weekly pet food giveaway. Do you know there were pet owners that came in from everywhere? They found that there were moms and dads who had been laid off, senior citizens who could not stretch the amount of money they were getting far enough anymore to even feed their food, get food for their animals, The animal lovers, every single one of them, forced by circumstances to the verge of doing the unthinkable, and that would be turning their animals into a shelter, until they heard about young Zach and what he had done. One of the stories they heard was about a dad who said his wife was ill. He had lost his job. Two teenagers in the family, as Zach filled their cart with a month's worth of dog food, said, you don't know how special this is. You're doing this for us. And there was one very elderly gentleman that thanked Zach, saying, my animals are the only family I have. I don't know how I'd go on without them. Bless you. Well, the line of need was growing and growing. And Zach said, we've got to keep this up. His mom said, I don't see how we can stop. Look at what is needed out there. Well, donations kept coming in to their surprise. People didn't forget Zach's dream. And when the pet food started filling up the garage again, you know, right to the ceiling, there was a strip mall owner that offered them a storefront rent-free. So the Animal Pantry of Central Florida opened its doors. The community has been totally behind this activity. Zach and his mom and family dole out 2,200 pounds of food to hundreds of pet owners every week. Try to wrap your mind about that. 2,200 pounds of food. Now, they're not alone in this. There's a lot of pet owners who had been in line to get the free food that come back to volunteer. Now, this helps Zach and his mom because there are other people in the family that have to be taken care of. And, of course, they have their own family needs. Well, this is something that is very, very special. And it all started out with a young boy, 9 years old, in a pet shelter, saying, we've got to do something. One person makes a difference. And it just expands and expands and expands. Isn't that marvelous? So don't put yourself down if you feel like you're not able to save the world, per se. Remember, the world you live in is the world you are right at this moment. And it can involve just a small area. A small boy had a big dream. Where do you think you can take your dream? Where do you think you can participate to help life become a richer experience? You may not have the money, but maybe you could give some time. You may not feel like you have an imagination to come up with an idea, but you may be able to support somebody else who has. One idea, small boy, grew into this wonderful, wonderful animal pantry of Central Florida. All of the things ended up happening because people said, there's a need, and we will fill it. This is Donna Sebo. I know we're out of time. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, understand you are significant and you do make a difference. You're a special person with special talents and special gifts. Don't hide them. Let them shine so that other people can benefit from who you are and what you have to offer. This is Donna Sebo. Join me tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.